What is up, all of you? This is Toffee Blues USA again, your source for all things Everton, American style. So it's just like a normal Toffee Blues thing, except we just have way less history with the club than a lot of the dudes who are talking from England. Yeah, that's just the way it is. So joining me on this voyage of blue discovery, he's been here a couple times before. It's just been a bit. It's been a hot second. I didn't realize how long it had been, but he's back now. Cameron from the Carolina Toffees is with us again. Cameron, what is up, man? I love your jacket.
I appreciate it, Jerry. How are you? Good to talk to you again since we were, I think, singing Spirit of the Blues because it was September and we were at the top of the league and we're basically running away with everything. So, yeah. Still good times.
Yeah,
appreciate it. This jacket is boss, by the way. That's the away warm up. It's the best.
I really love that. Yeah, does it have a hood?
Yes, it does.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Oh my.
Thought
gosh.
About just doing it like this the rest of the pod, but. I guess people want to see my face. Maybe not.
Yeah, I think in your case they'd prefer the hood down, you know, just to be able to connect with Cameron. See me, you know, if I did that, all my hair would be sticking out the front, and it would just be a hilarious effect, I think, and they'd probably prefer that. So yeah, I find it's preferred.
You've got that going on. I can't do that.
Trust me, never in my life has this been done. Only the past year, for real.
Yeah.
So Cameron's been on before. This is not Cameron's first Toffee Blues USA rodeo. I was trying to think about, I always like to do something a little unexpected with some people who have been on before. I wanted to go ahead and remind everybody, I did mention he is from the Carolina Toffees, which is the supporters group in my realm as well, because I'm from Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and Cameron is in the Charlotte, North Carolina area, and he's rocking that Carolina Toffees logo in the background.
Yes, this is actually the updated version, and I apologize, it's a little out of focus. It's because I literally grabbed it from a Facebook screenshot and put it as my background, so didn't have time to adjust it, but we, Gwen, who was nice enough to update it from our group, and it's going to be on all the subsequent merchandise that whenever we get rolling on that, it's going to be on there, and it's, and we're really excited for that, which is kind of a little bit of a spoiler, but yeah, but hopefully some merch will be dropping this year.
That's awesome. Yeah. So, and just let you know, if you're in the Carolinas area, you need to, check out the Carolina Toffees Facebook group. There's also Twitter. And it's just a really cool community in there. Some awesome people. So,
very true.
So yeah. So the weird thing, the thing I was, the unexpected, the curveball. Last time I gave Jeff Wallner a 10 question lightning round. I'm going to save that for the next time, because I didn't want to do back-to-back lightning rounds. So I'm saving that for next time for Cameron. So just saying, that check is in the mail, Cameron, all right?
I'll be prepared. if I got 3 months, maybe I'll be prepared.
So this time I was thinking about things that might be interesting for both our American Everton supporters that are watching and listening, but also the folks that are in England or maybe other parts of the world as well, because we do have a decent amount of people who are not in one of those two places. And I was thinking about good conversation topics for, you know, fans that maybe didn't grow up in the culture, you know? And I thought about it and I was like, you know, something that you discover as you go are those toffee taboos. Those little Everton supporting rules that you have, that you learn along the way that you don't, when you decide, hey, Everton works for me. Everton is, it's calling, it feels right. So I'm going to be an Everton supporter. It doesn't come with an instruction book. Although I will say, could be interesting video, just saying. It doesn't come with that. So, you know, a lot of times people will go and they'll join message boards and they'll accidentally put their foot in their mouth repeatedly just right out of the gate because they don't know what they're doing and they don't realize they're pissing people off. All right. And they're just doing the stuff that the Evertonians that have been supporting the club for years and years and years, they know this already. It's second nature to them. But some folks like us, Cam, it was not from birth. You know, for me, I grew up knowing ACC basketball. So learning about Premier League football, Premier League soccer, whatever you want to call it. It was a journey, right? So I wanted to ask you, Cam, which of those little Everton rules, or sometimes they're not little, sometimes they're pretty damn big. Which of those kind of toffee taboos have you kind of learned along the way that you feel like would A, be interesting to people in England, or B, educational to people like us, or C, just something that we can connect with? And so I'm hearing you and I'm like, yeah, I went through that. So what do you have on that topic?
Yeah, I think it would be great to have a handbook for this kind of thing, because I certainly, when I started rooting for Everton, I jumped right into it, and obviously you're just jumping right into the deep end. You know, you just don't even realize it.
Yeah.
But it's a whole new culture. I would say that when I first started all of this, and maybe even with the Twitter account, I didn't have the Twitter account originally, but I think on Facebook or some form of social media, I retweeted a periodical in England that is called The Sun, which I learned too late was a big mistake. I had no idea that it was basically banned in the entire city of Liverpool, and I didn't realize why. I then found out about Hillsborough, and I found out that there was a documentary that came out, I believe it was before the World Cup in 2014, Roger Bennett actually did the ESPN documentary about it, and subsequently the investigation and what happened and all the blame game that was done. And then you start to realize why everybody in the city of Liverpool can't stand that, that shitty, you know, periodical that it is. And I learned very quickly, don't ever, ever quote them. Don't ever talk to them. Don't ever do anything associated with them. And it's actually so ingrained in me now, you know, 7-8 years later, that whenever I see somebody quoting it, no matter who it is, who they support, where they're from, I'm like, if I know them, I'm like, guys, just don't, please. I try not to be too, you know, in their face about it if they don't know, because I was once like that. But if I see someone who knows about this and they do it, then it gets a little bit tense.
You know, earlier when I said little Everton taboos, and some of them are big damn ones, this is a big damn one. This is one of the biggest. You better damn well figure it out quick. Because it's heavy.
Yeah, I would say, and just to add on a really small one that I actually annoys me now, just if you watch like just broadcasts and the abbreviation for Everton when they're playing is EVE, EV, and that annoys me a lot, because I know for a fact Evertonians are very, very sensitive about when someone says, because when someone says EV or the EV, that is a put down. It's usually someone supporting the team from across the park.
Yeah.
And they're basically saying, oh, look at you little guys over there, you know. So when I see that abbreviation, it's kind of like, I guess they're doing it for just because they have to. But, you know, EFC would work just fine. You know, like, I don't really know why that is. And I've never really inquired about it. But it's kind of one of those little annoyances where when I look at it.
Yeah, it infers like head padding, and it's one of those things that, and I didn't realize that either until I was, you know, I think I was scanning like Grand Old Team like years and years ago, and there was a discussion in there about calling them the Ev or Ev, and mm-hmm. it was one of those, like, somebody had done that, and they were like, look, no, you know, that's right. It was a very, exactly. And it wasn't necessarily a rude conversation, but it was sort of like a, you know, we don't do that, you know, it seems, and from outside, it seems arbitrary, right? But
exactly, you just wouldn't even pay attention.
Yeah, that's a really good one, by the way. I didn't even think about that one. That is very true. That is definitely one of those that I ran into as well. So any others that you could think of?
See, this is why I may or may not have done well on your lightning round, because I got like two really big ones, and then it's kind of like, he's already fading. So it's like, got to come up with something else. I mean, I could leave the other one, like the big one for you, like, because it's for everybody. It's the fact when we interchange the terms soccer and football, it's, you know, we do it as Americans because it's really what we do. It's mm-hmm. how we grew up with it. We grew up with soccer. I mean, it's called Major League Soccer here. Mm-hmm. And in order to differentiate from football, and that's just how we know it here. Mm-hmm. I would say I try to make sure I use the term football when I'm talking with folks from across the pond, but mm-hmm. you know, if I say soccer, I say soccer. I'm unapologetic about it. I'm from the United States, so that's what we know.
So can I just say, I'm going to go ahead and get to this now, because otherwise we're going to have to get to it later. We're doing a mailbag segment later on in the show, and one of the questions from Instagram, okay, was from Jack_1, I guess that's lowercase, O.20. The question is, why do you say soccer? It's called football. American football is just weird rugby. So it's just way too appropriate not to go ahead and mention this and get it out of the way now, okay? I will say, when I first started doing Toffee Blues videos and content, I was recording a lot with Edward and Max and David, and it was a pretty small group of guys we were recording with, and it was funny, like every once in a while I'd let a soccer slip, and Dave always called it my soccer bombs. He's like, yeah, you let a few soccer bombs slip, you know, and I always thought that was, yeah, it was just great, because it was really confusing. I will tell you right now, for me, I was doing a show at the time, and the primary audience were English folks. So to me, it made sense to say football. It made sense to say football. That was our audience. And because I'm constantly thinking, who's watching this? You know, right now in this show, we got both. So every once in a while, I'll say soccer. And every once in a while, I'll say football. I got to tell you, you know, when I'm talking to, it's confusing sometimes, you know, because when you're having a conversation with an English person, and every once in a while you start talking about American football, and you just say football, but then you realize you feel silly for saying American football. And so it goes into this really weird, like, you start getting self-conscious about every time you mention a sport, either one of those. Okay. It's a very strange experience. Like I going through it, and I felt the need to kind of like qualify everything I'm saying every single time. And so what I've started doing now on this show is just, I mix it up. Sometimes I'll say soccer, sometimes I'll say football, and I'll mix it up. Because I think in Australia, they say soccer, right? Because they have Australian rules football.
Oh, they've got all sorts of weird stuff over there.
It's crazy. Australian rules football is so fun to watch.
I agree.
It's absolutely batshit, and I love it. Oh, my gosh.
I know. If Jack_ is watching this, you know, you think we have weird, if you think you we have weird sports, like, you need to take a look down at Australia. But it's weird. But like the Aussies, you know, we have weird sports, but we love them, all of them. Yeah. They're great.
Yeah, and I will say, if I was talking to Jack, I would probably, I'm one of those people, I tend to think about comfort and making people comfortable. So if I were talking to Jack right now, I would say football. You know what I mean? Yeah. I would. It's just kind of, it's just, you know, every once in a while that slip, because let's be honest, this is a sport I've been playing since I was five, and we called it soccer. Mm-hmm. And we still do. So some stuff's ingrained, yeah. But really it would just be out of politeness and comfort, I would say football.
Sure.
You know,
I mean, if you go into any sporting goods store in the United States, and what are you buying? What does it say? Soccer ball.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's just it.
Yeah. One last one really quick, before we get started, and it's not an Everton specific one. Also another, sure. Not another one, but, or not another Everton specific one. This one is just, it's strange. One of the first things you want to do when you decide, hey, I want to be an Everton fan, is I want to get a kit. I want a shirt, mm-hmm. You know? And you're like, I want to get a shirt. It's this big, long search. Who's going to be on the back of my shirt? What player am I going to get? Well, my first kit, I was like, it's got to be Leighton Baines, right? It's got to be Leighton Baines. That guy's the coolest. Mm-hmm. He just says so much about Everton. It's like, it's got to be Leighton Baines. So I'm about to buy this kit. And then I see on Grand Old Team, again, Grand Old Team. I mean, it's a popular forum. You know, if you're not already checking that out, great. It's one of those forums you got to check out. For the people who are watching. Yeah. I know Cameron knows. it's probably a very old hat for Cameron. So I saw a discussion on there about how the only kit people that get their name on the back of their kits and numbers on the back of their kits in England are kids. It's like little kid fans. It's like, oh, will you sign my shirt? You know, that kind of thing. And I was like, oh, crap. So if I get a kit, if I get a shirt and I wear it if I take it to England and wear it, probably going to catch some crap about that. Probably going to get teased about being a five-year-old, you know, But then, so I started getting really self-conscious about it. And then I realized, I was like, okay, you know something? I'm here in America, our culture, we're all about ordering jerseys with names and our favorite players on the back. And it's just something we do. You know, so I've been doing it and right. I have to, but you know what? I'm not going to take any of those to England. I'm going to be smart about it. I'm not going to invite any attention on myself when I go over there. Right. None of that, but yeah.
Yeah. So. I'm very self-conscious. I think literally any game you watch, for instance, you see the supporters, the adult supporters, they're all just wearing their normal everyday clothes.
Yeah.
And so it's just, it's basically a day out. They just, yeah. They're going out to watch the football and then they're going to go, well, they've been drinking and then they're going to go back out and go drink some more. So it's, when I will say this, as someone who's been to a few matches now over there, the good news is that in England, really, no matter what time of year it is, it's probably around 50 to 60 degrees. So you're always wearing a jacket. Or something mm-hmm. over it. Like every time I've gone to a match, I do have a kit on, but I always mm-hmm. then I have like a hooded sweatshirt or a jacket on over it. So it really doesn't matter. And you know, people will figure out that I'm an American very quickly because mm-hmm. one, I enter from the wrong side, like going in to get my ticket, and then so I get in the wrong line.
Yeah.
So and then they realize, oh yeah, that guy. And then, you know, it's when I'm talking, you know, if I end up engaging people in conversation, you know, it's always friendly. Like they always mm-hmm. enjoy, especially in the Northwest, they really enjoy having Americans up there for the most part, I would say. Because, yeah. You know, I get the sense that not a lot of Americans are in that part of England. Right. You know, generally, mm-hmm. it's usually always London or the South
right.
somewhere because of the coastline. So they always are intrigued, like usually when, hey, what are you doing here? And, oh, you come to watch a match, did you?
Awesome.
But they're always great. I mean, it's always great meeting them because they always will have a go with you because that's just how they are. But it's always complete 100% jest, and it's fun.
See, that's cool. That's cool to know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's awesome. Yeah. So anyway, I think that's the real thing at the end of the day is if you truly respect the club and other supporters, it doesn't really matter what kind of ridiculous faux pas you're going to commit. You care about the club, you love the club, you respect the other, you respect the club, its history and everything else. And it's kind of like you hold up your hands, you're like, my bad, not happening again. Much love, guys.
Right, exactly.
You know, and that's the respectful way to do it. And I feel like you do that and everything's cool, you know?
Exactly. And 3 or 4 beers in, no one's going to care.
Oh, geez. Sorry. I've gotten to the point where my tolerance is not what it used to be. And I'm like, 3 or 4 beers. Oh, my God. I'm going to be miserable.
Yeah. Yeah, well, for them, it's for some of the ones I met, it was a lot more than that. But
that's the thing. I'm going to be wanting to drink like so much like English beer when I get over there. And I'm just like, yeah, that's.
Yeah, I would say peer pressure does come into play a little bit over there.
I guarantee it.
When you've got guys that are twice your age just drinking you under the table, you're kind of thinking, okay.
Oh, the thing is, like, the night of, I can drink as much as I need to, but I'll probably be out for about a week afterward with pain.
Exactly.
You know, just feel like I got hit by 5 trucks. Oh.
Oh, so thank God my flight's not till 3 days from now.
Because I'll need every second of that to lay in the bed.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this has been super fun. I'm glad this is actually a really good topic, especially to talk with you, Cameron, because I feel like you bring a unique perspective. You're kind of you're a seasoned guy as an Everton supporter. And you've been over there, which is really cool. Anyway, we should move on though. We've got some more show to do. So I'm going to flip this card, which means we are moving on. Boom, done. All right, so we've got a Sheffield Wednesday preview for FA Cup. And after that, we've got a mailbag with a bunch of questions, okay? One familiar name as well that I was excited about when I saw his question. But we're going to do the Sheffield Wednesday preview, and this should be interesting.
I know so much about them.
We are just total experts on Sheffield Wednesday. So much about Wednesday. Yeah. So Wednesday's current form is they're 23rd in the championship right now with a record of 6-7-10, 19 points. Recent results. Honestly, their recent results are not bad. Recent results are actually pretty good.
We're catching them when they're just catching fire.
Yeah, know what I mean? That's what I was feeling good. I saw where they were in the table, and I was like, oh, they don't have a permanent manager yet, because when they sacked Tony Pulis, they had somebody lined up, but the person that they were wanting to line up wasn't really that interested and was worried about the instability at the club. And so, however, the recent results are not bad at all. Like I said, 2-0 win over Exeter City in the previous round of FA Cup. Before that, they had a 1-0 win over Derby FC. Before that, a 2-1 win over Middlesbrough. All right. They haven't lost since December 15th. Not bad. It's a solid little streak for the Owls, actually. So, anyway, so what I did, I'm not going to sit there and tell you, here's a good probable lineup for Wednesday, all right? Because But what I've done, I pulled a lineup from a previous match, but I didn't pull the one over Exeter because I just feel like they would line up differently against us than they did against Exeter, okay? So I pulled the lineup from the 1-0 win over Derby because I feel like the 1-0 win against another championship side, it just seems like maybe they'll do something similar. So what it looked like was they ran a 4-4-2, and they started with Wildsmith, Odubagio, Lees, Shaw, Palmer, Reach, Pelpesi, Bannon, Harris, Windus, and Patterson. Leading scorer is Patterson with 4 goals. Right behind him is Windus with 3. And their leading assister, that's just a weird assist player, assist maker, the creator of goals, is Bannon. He's got 4 assists. It's actually pretty solid coming from the wing. So I think you probably will see a decent amount of, I'm assuming those are coming from from crosses. Whenever you see a wing player getting lots of assists, that's usually the assumption, especially coming in a 4-4-2. So there's that. Usually when you hear about a club that is trying to stabilize, it's a popular thing for them to revert to a 4-4-2 formation. You know what I mean? That's a pretty common.
We know thing. All about that.
Yes, we do. Absolutely do. And I get it, because it's out of the formations, it's the simplest for the players to just learn their roles. Here's the roles, keep it simple, mm-hmm. you know? And I feel like we're going to see a decent amount of that. So what do you think, Cameron? Let's kind of, we don't really know much about this squad at all. We know they struggled in the championship this season. We know they're getting some wins, but what they're really doing, they're grinding. It's a lot of ground out wins, 1-0, 2-1, you know, 1-1 draw, that kind of thing. Seems to me, it sounds like a team that probably does a lot of defending and probably tries to catch you on the counter and get and be decent at set plays. Just, this is all assumption, but yeah, it's stereotyping. Yeah. Form. So yeah.
Sure. Well, before I get into it, I'm just going to base it off of the last team we played in the FA Cup. I know you already talked about
the Rotherham teams
that we were about. That I know you had in a previous podcast. First off, good question for your mailbag, your lightning round. Whenever for the next guy is, how many teams has Tony Pulis managed, and what are they?
No.
You could probably throw a dart. It's like Sheffield Wednesday fires manager. Who was it? Oh, maybe Tony Pulis. Oh, it was. So interesting.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Jeez. So, I mean, when you said that, I was like, oh, no way. How many teams has he managed in that country?
Yeah, yeah. And in his, I feel like he's had a strange stretch of managing over the past like year for some reason. Just even year has been a little odd for him, is the vibe I'm getting. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's just kind of like, just going to hang out in the championship for the rest of my career, which is not a bad idea. I mean, so as long as he can keep getting work.
Yeah.
So, be the Sam Allardyce in the championship, keep teams up. So, you might want to edit that out because someone may yell at me on Twitter for that one.
I will say, I'm not sure if anybody wants to be the Sam Allardyce of anything. I think the only thing is the Sam Allardyce of pouring wine into pint glasses.
There you go.
I'm fine with doing that. Yeah.
Of eating anything gravy based.
Yes. The gravy stuff tripped me out when I found it out, because I didn't know all that. When I saw people making these gravy granules references, and I just lost it. Bisto and stuff. Oh. It's so funny. Just the references for Allardyce alone. How are we talking about this now? How is this happening?
We laugh so that we don't cry about that era.
It's true. Absolutely.
You mentioned
the Rotherham game. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that going back to it, and first off, Rotherham hopefully was a cautionary tale for this club. Mm-hmm. I won't get too much into it, but, you know, watching that match, I guess it was 2 or 3 weeks ago now. Once again, a pattern sometimes whenever, like, I love the way Ancelotti has this team mm-hmm. set up and how he has them going full bore, but they have had a tendency, and I may attribute it some to injuries and whatnot, but they've had a tendency to, especially during their poor spell last year, where they would jump out and be just full bore for about 10, 15 minutes and have like 80% possession and going and basically looking like they're going to score. And then they do score. And once they do, it's like, let's hit the brakes here and hit the car goes like careening and goes from 60 to zero. Mm-hmm. It's almost like they just go right. And that's exactly what happened at Rotherham after Chank scored, was they just fell out. And then all of a sudden Rotherham got confident, was holding on to the ball. You know, they would basically stifle any attack we had and just try to hit us on the break. And I think if I'm Sheffield on a Sunday, you look at that as a blueprint. It's like Everton is going to come at you because they are the stronger side. And if, as long as you can put, you know, if you put about 9 or 10 guys back, which I really think is going to be their strategy, because they know that they can get into a PK situation, which, because it's only one match, you know, that would be their bread and butter against us. So I would be very cautious if I were Everton. I want them to go all out, especially because I would hope by this point, with all the off time they've had, that some guys are healthy and they can actually put out a full squad this Sunday. And I would hope that they are going all out in the, I guess now the preferred formation of 4-2-3-1, and just absolutely just blitz style attack these guys. And I would love to go back to September, where we have comfortable games. I don't know what those are anymore, but like a 2-3, 3-0 victory would be fantastic. But I think that would be the strategy. But again, going back to Rotherham, you know, we saw what happened when you just. No matter what the side is and where they are and what they're doing, like, they're still dangerous. They're still a side that's not, you know, especially as you mentioned, they're finding their form. They haven't lost since mid-December. So they obviously have found a formula that works. So we've got to be very careful.
Yeah. It was a kind of a vibe of complacency, wasn't it? After we got that goal, it was very just okay, we got a lead. I think we're probably going to keep the lead. Don't you guys think, you know? And it's almost like they were having that conversation while the other team was like attacking, while that little American on the wing was, it was streaking down.
How predictable was it? He was going to score. I was like, oh, it's like, of course he did.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, I remember earlier in the game, I heard them mention, you know, it's from the U.S. I was like, oh, you know, I made that classic mistake where I was like, oh, I hope he has a decent game. Never think that. Wait till after the game and then say, well, hope he has a good season, you know?
Yeah. Well, good game, guy.
man. And then, like, it took a little while for us to, you know, kind of turn things back into gear, get things back in gear in the second half. It was just such a strange match, man. Do you think this game could find us doing some coasting? Is that a new trademark of the squad, or is that, like you mentioned, do you think that's due to injury and us kind of still finding a footing?
I think that the coasting was just, we were so, the Rotherham match was a combination. I think they thought they really were going to be able to go about 80% and get a victory very quickly. I mean, I think they bought in. Rotherham's, you know, in the relegation zone in the championship, not playing well, hadn't won a match in God knows how long. And on top of that, they were playing with basically no striker, because I don't really classify Cenk at this point as really any position player for us. I guess he's a striker, but at the same time, we were racked with injuries. But I also don't want to make that excuse, and you shouldn't be making excuses like that, especially against a side that you should be head and shoulders above.
Absolutely agree.
So that. I think that woke them up. They're going to have a full squad hopefully come this weekend. And I think especially Carlo is not going to put up with any of that. I think anybody who looks like they're coasting is going to get, or isn't playing well, is going to get yanked around minute 55, 60. So
love that.
Which I enjoy seeing. And that, you know, the group that has been on notice really, I think, since the start of the year has been that midfield. I think he's still messing around with it, because he's, you know, between injuries, you know, it's not going to affect this weekend's game. Doucouré's got a suspension coming up next week, and which I know you'll be discussing on the next pod. But that's, he's going to have to tinker again. But quite honestly, you know, I'm thinking if he doesn't start Jaimes, then really we're looking at another midfield, central midfield that includes one of Gylfi, Davies, Gomez. And if he doesn't, when those combos aren't working well, it's a disaster in the midfield.
Here's a question. So, Decore is supposed to be suspended for the Leicester match, which means Decore could play this one. You think he plays him just to make sure and get, you know, get some play out of him, get, you know, any kind of rust and make sure? Because it didn't occur to me until you mentioned that, and I was just like, that would be a perfect time to start him then, you know?
Yes, and I think that automatically puts Decore in the lineup Sunday.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, otherwise he wouldn't have played for more than 2 weeks before his next start.
Right.
So, and I think he's healthy. If the FA says you can play him, you know, it has nothing to do with the league. So, I absolutely got to play him. He has been by far and away most consistent midfielder we've had all season. And I would say, you know, I would say you can throw Jimenez and you can throw Allen in there, except they've both been injured. That's the only reason I make that comment. Except, you know, but even when everybody's healthy, Decore is the box-to-box midfielder that we need to absolutely have.
Yeah.
And once he came in against Rotherham, I mean, look at the night and day it was. I mean, it was just – it's amazing the head and shoulder level that he is above, say, Gylfi or Davies or Gomez. I mean, it's actually kind of shocking, to be honest with you. And it also it demonstrates that – you know, we've been hearing that there's probably not going to be any movement in the transfer window this month. But, you know, we still are – when we get exposed and have some bad matches like we've had in the last month or two, you know, it demonstrates that we still have some work in the summer to offload some guys and get some new ones in here.
So, who do you think starts with Decore in the middle? Do you think it's going to be – Andre Gomes or Tom Davies?
Ooh. I mean, it's almost like a rotation at this point.
Good point.
The good thing is that with Decore masks weaknesses from the other guys. And so I think he's kind of, Carlo's in a good position there, because as long as Decore's there, he basically can make up for some of the deficiencies for the other guys. Honestly, it's a roller coaster ride with both of those guys, Gomes and Davies. It's like, wow, we're praising, you know, Davies 1 week, and the next week we're like, he better not start again. But the same thing goes for Gomes. I think the issue for Gomes is he is such a liability going back. Mm-hmm. And I almost feel like with the fact that we are going to try and press for goals quickly, it would be a Davies type of match where, because at least as much as I don't like Davies when he's in the back either, because he turns the ball over way too much in the wrong areas. Mm. I still think he's a little bit better than Gomes is moving forward. Although we just saw what Gomes is capable of doing when he actually has the ball at his feet and he has, you know, enough space to cross in.
Mm-hmm.
Against Wolves, for instance, which I know was talked about, but that I mean, it's just kind of like I could see him going either way. I would say maybe just on form alone, put Gomes next to Decore and see how that works, and then just go from there. And if it doesn't work, then you have to make a sub at 60 minutes.
I mean, if I'm Carlo, it's weird. I'd be thinking things like, okay, are either one of them carrying a knock? Okay, if so, I start the other one. You know, which one am I thinking about starting against Leicester? Okay, start the other one. You know what I mean? And so it's kind of little stuff like that. Or are you planning on starting both? Do you feel like Tom Davies had a good game last match? Does he need to get it out of his system? If so, start him. Or you want to build on the momentum that Andre Gomes is building. Then we go there. It's such a strange way, and the way Carlo works, it's like it's man management, right? He's usually so intelligent about how to dole that out, you know. So I'm sorry.
And I said, and this is also where I'm trying to remember who was starting in the midfield against Leicester the last time, because he's got to make that call too, because most likely whoever starts Sunday isn't starting against Leicester on Wednesday next week, unless they're fully fit and ready to go. I'm trying to remember which of the two was on the pitch for that one for the majority of the time, because obviously it was one of the best matches they've played this year.
Yeah.
So that would probably also factor into this decision he's making on Sunday.
If there's no Decore for Leicester, is there a possibility Davis and Gomez are both playing?
I don't see how he's going to do that and justify it, because they were such a liability as a duo the last time they were out there in that position. And that midfield, I mean, if you've watched any of the Leicester match against Chelsea yesterday, they are fully healthy now and full bore. I mean, Madison is going to run right through them. I'm sorry to say, if those two are starting, we have to have somebody else in the middle. Yeah. And Gilfie's the same thing.
Any word on Alan or maybe Aubameyang? Any word on those guys?
I know. In fact, it'll be, you know what I'm really looking forward to is Carlo's conference on, I guess it'll be Friday.
Yeah.
And maybe, because like, you know what happened before the Rotherham match was, hey, guess what? Lucas Digne's healthy. He's starting.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the message. What's I always find interesting is when the Everton Twitter account and Instagram, the social media team, is mum with their practice photos, because that's usually a signal that somebody big is returning to training and they don't feature him in the training sessions. Obviously, possibly can, but it's because I think he did say something to the effect of Alan was supposed to be back by the end of January, and we're getting closer to that date. So, it would be amazing if he is back for this weekend, because at least that can take some of the pressure off.
It'd be great. I'm not going to count on it. The fact that we've heard nothing, but I would be blown away if somehow Aubameyang's healthy for this match with Sheffield Wednesday. What a perfect, you know, not a league match. So it's still pressure, but it's not the pressure of a league match. You know what I mean? It seems like it'll be a great time for him to come in and get some minutes. Who knows that? But I guarantee you they are taking their time with him. Yeah, I would.
I know that Netflix just rebooted, what was it, Unsolved Mysteries? So if they, the next go-round of episodes, if you do one on Aubameyang, I mean, you'd have everybody in Liverpool, and at least Everton supporters, hooked on it. I'm like, where is this guy?
I so love a good, like, comeback story. I hope he comes up back and just kicks ass. I would love to see that. Oh, the poor guy has just had, like, the worst.
You know, and what's crazy is – what's nuts is that – people probably don't remember it because it was so long ago. It was the first two games of, 19. He was fantastic. He started both games. And he was doing great. And then all of a sudden, you know, I guess it was his Achilles. It was just terrible. I mean, people forget that before that happened, he was playing – he was basically going to be like an entrenched midfielder for us.
Yeah, he was. It'll be cool once he's healthy. It'd be nice to be able to, because right now our main like athletic, you know, cover in the back there is Decore. Decore is the one who's got those long legs, who can track people down. He's the he's physicality. Like, it's interesting. Like, Alan's more of a pit bull. You know, actually, I think it's what they called him at Napoli. They called him a pit bull. I talked to a friend of mine who's Italian, and I told him, I was like, Alan, right? And he was like, oh, he's the pit bull. And I was just like, yes, that's who we need.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, part of the reason that Decore is going to have to sit out, I mean, these five yellows he's picked up, is because he's had to cover so much ground because Alan's been out. And really, the other three guys that play in the midfield regularly are too slow to backtrack like he does. So essentially if an attack breaks down, then he's chasing after whoever, you know, has the ball. And eventually what he ends up having to do is take a foul because, you know, he's preventing a break. And that's part of the reason that he's got to sit down. So we desperately need Alan back quickly. And it'd be great. If Aubameyang is suddenly healthy, fantastic.
So we haven't discussed what's funny as we're talking about the midfield, which all three of the lines are worthy of discussion in this conversation or like, you know, you've got your, I mean, we don't even know who's going to start a keeper. You know, I personally, I would go with Olsen, but Carlo doesn't always do that. He doesn't always start the backup in FA Cup.
Right.
He doesn't do it like that. So you could see Pickford. I wrote down Olsen because that's who we started against in the previous match against Rotherham. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe he's thinking Pickford needs a few more minutes. So before the next league match, don't know.
Sure.
So what about the back line, dude? What are you doing there?
It's hard for me to go away from what worked against Wolves. I mean, they were a very good, that was a good line that they played back. I mean, they basically were playing, it was a little bit makeshift and they had to defend a lot. So I like the group. I mean, obviously I would take at this point, he's not starting Nkunku no matter what. So we know that. So Dean is in and I would start Dean anyway. He needs the minutes.
Agreed.
I would say he's probably going to give Coleman the start at right back. He's still trying to work him back in and to get more minutes. And then really it's all usually the talk of the back line is who's playing.
So roll the dice. I just realized I was doing this to roll the dice. And then I realized that's not what that looks like.
That's not it. Yeah.
Accidental hand gestures.
Sorry. Hey, guess more miscommunication. Between Americans and
should have done the boggle dice, you know, that little thing. That's what it really should have been. Yeah, but hey,
there we go. Oh, I missed that game.
But yeah, I agree with all of that, actually, Cameron.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it really, we haven't played in what? It'll have been over 10 days. So everyone is fresh. Why not? But again, you have to think about the league match against Leicester. They're going to be maybe possibly co-league leaders when we play them next week. It's a massive game. And so we have to be mindful of that. But even so, keeping that in mind, I still have to say Michael Keane is getting the start. He's probably playing arguably the best of anybody out on the pitch right now. I would not start him. Mina is always the wild card. Is it going to be him or is it Holgate? Or is it someone else?
But, Godfrey.
Or Godfrey. That's right. And honestly, the thing with Godfrey is I like him so much that I would rather hold him out and keep him fresh for Leicester next week because he's been so massive for us. What he could do is he could take Dean out, put Godfrey left back, and maybe mix in Holgate, Keane, and then Coleman.
Good.
Or the nice thing is, it's like with Godfrey, it's a Swiss Army knife. You can put him really anywhere in that back line, and it's
– Well, you bring up something massive. Interesting. I it occurred to me earlier, but I didn't really think about it. But now that I do, I mean, it could be a Godfrey at left back and Luca Dean on the left wing again scenario. Yeah. Could do the same thing. I thought it would be a valuable opportunity to get Luca Dean minutes at left back to kind of get him worked back in to doing what he normally does, get him used to it, right? Because he's been great at attacking. It's just been, you know, the defending angle of being a left back again and getting back to it, getting used to it, that kind of stuff. But I think that's a point, dude. I think he may prefer to start Godfrey at left back and – Luca Dean at left wing instead of somebody like Anthony Gordon.
Yeah, and then Gordon's another one we sometimes fail to mention is because he gets a little lost in the shuffle for as great of September as he had in our cup matches. He's kind of I wouldn't say he's gone the way of Nkunku, but at the same time, you know, Carlo is clearly not comfortable starting him in too many matches, especially giving him minutes. Yeah. But I think a match like this is just like when he played against Rotherham. I thought he was it's valuable. It'd be very interesting. I don't know how much tinkering Carlo's going to try to do here, but, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing Godfrey and Gordon on the left or even putting Dean up in a Pienaar role like with Baines. And back in the day when that was just a lethal duo.
Yeah.
And but you also have to be mindful, of course, that he is as crazy and as miraculous as Dean's recovery was from this injury he had.
Still needs rest.
I don't know. Yeah, it is a cup match against a championship side. Maybe if you're going to play him maybe even like left center mid next to Godfrey or somebody and have him kind of maybe trail a little bit. I don't know. But we'll see.
Yeah.
There's a lot. The nice thing now is that we have options, at least on that side. So
I don't know. I got a vibe that – I don't know. I feel like Godfrey just goes up to Carlo and is like, I'm going to start today. Is that cool?
Yeah.
Carlo's like, Bob, but that's fine. You know, he's just so like, sure, that's cool. You know, whatever.
well, okay. I can't do the eyebrow raise, but it's okay.
So, is this a Tosin match or is Tosin going to be going? Do we need to free Tosin up to leave?
Yeah, I keep seeing the, I don't know how many Turkish clubs at this point have been like, oh yeah, we'll think about it. Maybe it's like, sure, why not?
Yeah.
I think every single Turkish club at this point has been linked with him. Mm-hmm. Eventually that's going to happen. I mean, his contract runs out. I think it's this summer or next summer. And he'll be going. For me though, if DCL's healthy, get him back out there. He's had what, 3 weeks now, I think, to get healthy. I think the other thing is DCL needed rest. I think he had trailed off a little bit in December. He was, he had such a hot start to the season. And I mean, he's still in the top three in goal scorers this year, even though I don't think he scored in over a month. So, but if he's healthy, I there's no justification not starting him and putting him up there. But I would say maybe, if you want to mix it up, either Hymus or, Richarlison goes up top with him, maybe to ease the burden a little bit.
Yeah. Do you think we could see another?
Or at least in a much, behind him a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you think we could see another false nine situation like we did? You know, that's the point. Like now I have no idea what we're going to do.
That's right. I mean, I honestly can't tell. I could not even try to speculate on what is going to happen Sunday in terms of our lineup.
Yeah.
I have no idea who's healthy. I mean, when he came out before that, I guess it was the Rotherham match and said that, we got about five guys out. Like, when did this happen?
Yeah.
So, but okay. So I thought that because remember we all thought, oh, he's resting Calvert-Lewin and like, oh, no, turns out he's actually hurt. And it was just, okay. I mean, what I'm worried about, because, this is the life of an Everton fan, is that with all this time off and all the practicing that's been going on, so who picked up a knock this week in training is just,
Oh, no.
please. It's like, I'm praying, like, please, God, don't let this happen again.
Well, look. Because
you almost, it's always with us in training. Always somebody, like, picks up a knock in training. Oh, God, what happened?
Well, if I will say one player that I feel pretty confident about saying this guy should start, I think Mr. Omelet and Beans himself. I think old Iwobinho. I kind of feel like he should be going ahead and be penciled in. He's got a hot streak going right now, and I would not take him out. He's looked very strong. He's creating a lot of opportunities. I think there's a lot of excitement about Iwobi now, which is the opposite of the way it was about 2 or 3 months ago.
Yeah, and you just if you want to have a lot of fun on Twitter, you just go read the Arsenal fans in Everton's mentions whenever Iwobi is mentioned as Iwobinho or when he scores a goal.
Yeah.
Because it's something else. And they, especially because I know of a couple of Arsenal fans here who are laughing at us, and for good reason, a couple of seasons ago when we desperately bought him at the last second for way too much money. And But then, you know, I wouldn't say everything, like, roles have reversed, but now we're starting to see, like, the biggest knock on Iwobi from what I, from the Arsenal fans told me is, like, he's a great, he does a great job in the middle of the pitch, but he's a horrifyingly bad in the final third. And yeah, just, and we saw that. We've been seeing that for a while, until just about 2-3 months ago. He was terrible at finishing. But, you know, if he really has found his shooting boots, which obviously, I mean, that goal he scored last week was fantastic. It's a good team goal, but he had to finish it. It was difficult. But it's I would say, yeah, he's basically found his role at Everton. And that's his spot to lose.
If Wednesday is a tough nut to crack when it comes to their defense, because it looks, when I'm looking at their results, they're not allowing a lot of goals now. So my guess is they pack it back like we were talking about, right?
Yeah.
You need someone to unlock. And not all of the unlocking happens by crossing it out and having people, you know, head in opportunities. You need someone who's going to get some penetration. And he is one of our best players on the dribble cracking into a defense. Like, he's incredibly skilled. And that's he is beginning to show that. As far as the quality, he's creating chances. It's not even just the ones where he's scoring. He's creating other opportunities too. He's become like, he's starting to play a little more of that number 10 role from the wing, which is what he's best at. He's not your typical go down, cross from the in line type of guy. It's just not what he normally does. So it's cool. He's starting to embrace it. I feel like it's a Carlo man management thing. I think that he's helping to tap into who Iwobi wants to be, and he's expressing himself. Really cool, you know?
No, it's exactly what I think everyone initially thought he was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, he hasn't found his role. But look, this is why, you know, and I still pinch myself that we have Carlo as our manager.
I know.
Because this is – It's one of those things where, you know, Carlo is the first manager we've had in a very long time that will manage in-game and will literally make in-game adjustments, at least visible to everybody. Yeah. When everybody's literally screaming at their television, move him over here. Like, that's exactly what happens. Or it's like, why is he on this side of the pitch? And then all of a sudden he's on the other side. And so it's but it's – Carlo understands, like, I still would say, like, Carlo's, he's been on the job a little over a year, but he's figuring out all of his players at this point, what their tendencies are, what they're good at. And I think he's really starting to find the right core to be on that pitch all the time. And now it's just a matter of kind of filling in some of the gaps that we have that are still there, but it's, we're getting closer for sure. We're very, very close to being one of the great teams in the league. I think that are consistently great.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah. So Cameron, prediction, FA Cup prediction against Wednesday. Ooh, what are we predicting?
Based on everything just said, I would say, I think you're right. Wednesday is going to try to feel out the game a little bit, see if they can attack. And then, but I think Everton is really going to go full bore, and they're going to have to be on they're going to put them on their heels. And I think eventually they're going to try to settle in and basically play out from the back. I think a fresh Everton who will have not played for almost 2 weeks, I think they're going to be, it'll almost be like a new season for them, and it's going to be refreshed, ready to go. I'm going to say, just to be conservative, I'm going to say 2-0. To Everton for the win.
Me too.
All righty.
Me too.
I think we did that last time. We picked that.
I'm saying 2-0. Games against championship sides are not easy. I'm just going to say it.
No.
And I want to make sure that it's not like our it's not the easiest thing to be able to catch a lot of games of championship soccer. In America, championship football in America.
Right.
I don't get to watch a lot of games, you know, because for me, it's like in my family, we watch a lot of matches, but it's usually, you know, games we recorded on YouTube TV, you know,
right.
And, or maybe it's Bundesliga, maybe it's Serie A. We don't get to watch of championship football. I will say mine and Cameron's lack of knowledge about Sheffield Wednesday may be misconstrued as some sort of disrespect. Not really the case. I think if anything, we are pretty friggin' cautious about this game because it's very easily a banana peel, for us. We've had this kind of thing go wrong before for us.
You don't have to remind me about how many times we've tripped up against championship sides in this tournament.
Yeah.
I don't want to bring PTSD to Everton fans, but Millwall 2 years ago. And then the one that we actually, that nobody speaks about anymore, and one that I will never, ever forget for the wrong reasons, was Wigan 2013. So I just need to say those two games, I don't, and in fact, I like doing this because it's kind of a therapy session, but you know, Wigan at least won the tournament that year. And it was, so at least there was that, but other than that, that's the only thing I can say about that match, because that was like 4 or 5 years into my rooting for Everton. And then I really was questioning what I was up to at that time in my life.
No, it's funny. Like whenever my kid is like a very obsessive about checking the different league tables, and he will literally read out, he's 8. So he like reads out the names of all the teams, the tables and what place they're in and everything. And whenever he gets to Millwall, he gets so pissed off, man, because he still remembers that. And he's still so angry about it. And he's 8. It's beautiful. The anger is beautiful, but it's just, it reminds me every time. And so I'm like, good, you share that with me. That's great. But that was a shitty time, man. Oh, that was a shitty time.
That's one of the top 5 angriest matches ever for me.
Yeah. I don't know if I felt like throwing a lot of stuff in my living room watching games. That right there, that was a heavy, heavy temptation day on that one. So anyway, we're predicting 2-0 wins. Both of us are. Anyway, so let's move on. Time to move on to the mailbag. That's my transitional. So we have a decent chunk of questions to answer. The first one, from a familiar face, familiar name, somebody I miss doing shows with. All right. When I was doing all the Toffee Blues shows, I was able to talk to all these guys all the time. And now that I have a day job, you know, I don't get to record with the English guys nearly as much. It's such a bummer because I miss them too. You know, I'm in this cool world where I get to meet all these awesome American fans now. So it comes with positives, but I miss people like this. So this is Terry McAllister, who does Toffee Blues content. And he's got a great question, Cameron. Sure. What's funny is that he asked this same question in like the little Toffee Blues chat, you know, and then he posted it here and I was like, okay, good. Cause I think this is a good conversation. But he said, if offers came in for Tosin and Bernard this month, but they couldn't be replaced until the summer, would you do it and just hold your breath? Or would you not want to take that chance given what's on the table this season? And I got to be honest, it's sort of a holy crap question for me because I feel really comfortable arguing both sides.
Absolutely. I think the way I'm going to answer that is I'm going to split the difference and I'm going to say yes for the one, no for the other. And you might be surprised at my yes and no.
Okay.
I said this, there was, I think it was actually during the Rotherham match, I think, that there was a rumor there's an offer on the table from Roma for a swap for Robin Olsen for Bernard. And I said at the time, and I think it was because Bernard was having a rough game and Olsen was doing fine. And I said, just get a Zoom meeting and get that contract signed, get that swap done. Yeah. I think personally at this moment right now, And I think Royal Blue Mersey, among others, has been talking about, we are really shallow right now at striker. And I was a little surprised that they let Ellis Sims go out on loan, because he's our U23 striker. If we lose Calvert-Lewin for a significant period of time, all we have as a true striker behind him is Cenk. So I'm more saying right now I would keep Cenk and hold my breath. It's purely for the reason that we don't have anybody else right now, especially if they're saying they're not going out and getting anybody, and they don't have Ellis Sims now. So you basically are left with Cenk. You have to basically keep him at least until the summer. You'll probably get a better – maybe you'll get a better money offer for him anyway in the summer. But I would be more inclined to sell Bernard, especially if they can get good pricing for him. Because another issue with Bernard is his wage bill is outrageous. It's something like $100,000 or $110,000 a week.
Because we got him on a free.
Yeah, exactly.
So he got a little higher, yeah.
Yeah, so that's why they were willing to part with him. And it was but I mean, I love Bernard's work rate. I always, he makes me smile when I watch him play, because he's just running around all over the place. And he obviously, I mean, he works so hard out there to, and you know, he's always at a disadvantage with his size, but at the same time, you know, when he has good games, they're really good games. And the problem is he hasn't been as consistent as he has been in the past. And I think, if Roma's willing to take him and swap us Olsen in the process, if that offer's on the table, I'd do it now, and then I'd keep Cenk until summer.
Well, the most recent rumor for Bernard is I'm trying to remember what the name of the team is. Is it a team from Dubai who's interested in him?
I think I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, and the money looks, you know, pretty good. Or, you know, it's a decent, if it's true, you never know with this kind of stuff. And they it may be true, and they've leaked it just to kind of potentially put a little pressure on. Never know how this stuff works. I like Bernard a lot. I feel like he offers something different, you know. Cenk Tosun's a player I've always, you know, but I felt like he doesn't have the same speed and mobility as he did before his injury.
Right.
And I didn't think he was that fast or mobile before the injury. You know what I mean? So having said that, right now, here are our striker options. We got Cenk Tosun, we got DCL, we got Richarlison, and then we have that bizarre, weird formation that when we did the false nine, where we weren't really starting a normal striker. Right?
Right. Exactly.
So Cenk Tosun goes out. It's DCL and Richarlison are running a false nine the whole rest of the season. That is a risk. That is a big old risk. Now, here's the thing. The way I'm trying to there's a picture of the guy. There's a guy back there. I don't know if you see him. His name's Marcel Bronze.
Yes.
That guy. Yeah, it's not my children. Not the 5-year-old or the 8-year-old. Yeah, not those guys. But they run a very different type of club.
Exactly.
but here's the thing. If Everton sells Cenk Tosun and Bernard, I have to believe there's a plan. We sent Ellis Sims out on loan, because frankly, they don't think he's ready. You know,
right.
He can't be ready. He's had plenty of opportunities in some of these, like Carabao Cup matches, where you think he's going to get a chance, and he never did. They never really thought, it's almost like they felt like just being on the bench was experience enough, because he's not quite there, you know? So who is there? Well, Cenk Tosun, you know, he's still able to score the occasional goal if it's put his way in the box. Can he create his own shot? Well, that's debatable. You know, Richarlison can if he's playing striker.
Right.
You know, but if Marcel Bronze and Carlo feel comfortable letting those guys go, I got to think there's a plan, man. I got to think there's some kind of plan. And it's one of those things where Terry's asking for our opinions, and I don't think he wants me to go, I trust those guys. You know, I feel like he'll probably say, you're copping out, Jerry, you know, what are you doing? I would be willing to hold my breath if we sell them. I would be. Okay? I would be.
Yeah.
But at the same time, here's the deal. A lot is at stake this season. Very few things have to go right for us to get top four. You know, we're fully in the hunt. You know? I do see value in Bernard for our squad. I do see value in Jink Tosin in our squad. They do have a role. Do I feel like it would be ideal would I want to replace them if they left? Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I just don't, I am of a mind right now, I don't think they're going. I think Bernard has a higher chance of going than Jink Tosin right now because of the depth of the position.
Yeah. I agree. That's to be honest, like I'm totally with you, and I don't want to cop out either. If they sell them both, fine. I will trust that there is some plan down the road, or finding somebody either in somewhere in the depth to help us get into top four that's mm-hmm. going to step up. Something that does trouble me a little bit, and it's not something Brands has a lot of control over, is the fact that, and there's been articles about it, our academy is not nearly what it once was.
Right.
Now, Brands has been there now, I guess, 3 or 4 years. He's trying to help build it back up. But it is not nearly where it was once was. And you brought up something about Ellis Sims that is absolutely true. They have given him so many opportunities to break through into this, into the senior squad, and it hasn't happened. He's basically now stuck in purgatory, which is the U23s. And if he doesn't have a good loan spell here at Blackpool, it's going to be a real issue for him moving forward. And we've seen it way too many times in the last 5-6 years. Guys, just we think they're going to be good. We put them, give them a shot to play in a senior league side for a match, and then they stink up the joint, and then they go back down to the U23s, and then they get sold. And mm-hmm. so it's, I would long to have the days back where who's it? Southampton's side, like academy. I mean, mm-hmm. they're basically the so gold good. Standard as well. They've been for a while now. And that's another area that really needs improving. But, Bronze's specialty right now is obviously going and finding these guys that a lot of people have not heard of and, turning them in, and then they come in and they become superstars. Latest is like, I didn't really pay attention to Norwich, but like then Ben Godfrey gets signed, and I immediately thought, they spent, $27 million on him. He must be pretty good. Yeah. Turns out he's a little bit better than pretty good.
Yeah.
And so, that goes back to like what you're saying is that there's always a plan, it seems, with these guys, Brands and Ancelotti. Mm. So if they end up selling Bernard and Cenk, I'd be a little upset about Bernard leaving, but I would say, okay, well, let's see what happens.
Yeah, it's not an easy question. Terry, I knew it was going to be a tough one. I knew we were going to squirm. To be honest, I don't – if I have to answer that one way or the other, if it has to be one way or the other, I don't want to sell them. I'll just say it. I don't want to sell them just because I do think there's something on the table this season. I don't know if it's a title, but I do think top four is still possible, even though we're super thin. But you know what? Carlo's starting to fill weird holes with weird solutions, and sometimes they make a weird bit of sense. So,
yeah,
I wouldn't want to sell them yet, plus one other thing about Carlo that I've noticed, he makes players that were struggling and helps them to find their best form. He's doing it with a ton of people. Oh, maybe he does.
I remember people wanting Michael Keane to be sold not that long ago. And all of a sudden he's now one of the best players.
Yeah, I gave Keen a lot of flack because he seemed so fragile, you know? He's the opposite of that now. He's an absolute, you know? He's so consistent now. I honestly, it would be fun to put together like a montage of passes. Michael Keen passes splitting the lines. That would be beautiful. He totally deserves it. Just saying.
Yes, he does. I mean, Chank doesn't score against Rotherham without him. So that's one of those many areas where he's just, it's amazing the night and day with him finding forward players, like, and just catching him in stride.
Oh yeah. It's beautiful. When my 8-year-old goes, "Oh, what a ball." Yeah, I know. That's from a center back. That's awesome. You know? So yeah, big Michael Keen fan these days. I've been saying it since I think the first game we had this season. So next question. This one is sort of mean. I'm going to say it. It's sort of mean. Okay. But it's, would you have hair like Jank for a year if it meant we'd finish top four?
Sort top of four?
I'll just go ahead and say it. Yes, I would do it. Okay. As long as I knew it would be a short-lived thing, I absolutely would do it. Top four is worth it to me. And I gotta hope my wife loves me for my personality as well.
Yeah, you're in a much bigger predicament than I am with that, because at least as a single guy, I might be able to explain myself. But I would also, I would try and get people at QCBC to do the same thing, just because it would be either that, or I would say, well, you know what? It's 80 degrees out. I don't care. I'm still wearing a beanie. But I'm guessing one of the caveats is I'm not allowed to do that. And top four. Yeah, I probably would. I mean, I haven't experienced, top four. No, we've come close. Like, mm-hmm. actually watching the Villa match that they put on YouTube, was it this past weekend, the one in 13-14 when we finished it. So that was a fun time. But that's like getting me to remember those good old days when we were consistently good and top four. I mean, what I would give to see this club back in Europe and in the Champions League, not Europa. Europa would be fine, but
yeah, well. It's funny, my kid was like, "I really want us to go to Europa League." And I was just like, "Well, why not Champions League?" And he was like, "Either one, but I like Europa." I guess it's because there's so many teams from so many different places. He finds that fascinating. So, you know, I'll take it, by the way. Just, I would absolutely
never knew. Oh. Never knew those cities existed.
This is true.
Yeah, it's like arms. I think Roger Bennett once said it. I think when we went back to Europa, was it 14-15 season? He's like, it's like the havens for the arms dealers and the drug traffickers.
Oh, no.
I don't know. There was like one place. I think it was like Krasnodar was, I think. And it was where is this place?
Like, you go to Krasnodar to draw. I feel like we went there to try to draw with them because it was so hard to beat at their place. I remember they're a wall. Jeez.
Yeah, that's right.
So, and one other thing that occurred to me, if we make top four, it may necessitate Jink actually serving a role and playing well. So it could be like an homage to a player who's contributing at that point. So then.
There you go. There you go.
Makes sense. All right.
Just wait in May when he scores the goal to send us into the Champions League in the top four in the last day of the season.
Hey, I'm hoping this isn't contractually binding. I'm just saying.
Yeah, don't hold us to this, guys.
Yeah, that's question. I'm just going to say, by the way, that question, by the way, was someone named Reptilian Space Pope. So I'm just going to say that that may be one of the best Reddit names I've ever seen.
So that'll work,
Please don't take me to the Reptilian Space Vatican and make me swear by anything, all right?
Convert me to your religion if we have to do this.
So next question, which is another good one. Dina Scream, or Dean Scream. Say everyone is back fit. Who's your ideal center back pairing?
I think we tried to address it, but it's – is he talking about Sunday or just in general?
Just in general. Ideal center back pairing, period. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Man, God, that's tough. You know, on his day, when Mina's on, he's on. And him and Dean are, like, unstoppable back there. The problem is, for me, when you include people like Godfrey and Holgate, we've turned what was a real weakness of this team into one of the biggest strengths.
Yes.
And it's great. And it's great. Mm-hmm. I love it. And I love this question because it's a good problem. Mm-hmm. Keane is definitely there. For sure. And at this point in time, I would play Keenan Godfrey in the center, because Godfrey is arguably week in, week out our best player. Mm-hmm. When he's on the pitch. I like him obviously also at left back as well, but he's and he can play right as well. But I think that the way his style of play, it suits him mm-hmm. to be in the center. Yeah. And I think he's a little more consistent right now than Yeri is, even though I love Yeri on his best days because he's unstoppable. But like I said, I would say ideally I'd put Keane and Godfrey together now.
I like the Keane-Mina pairing right now. I like the consistency of them. Like, personally, I wouldn't start Mina this weekend because I feel he's too injury prone, and I'd like to keep him healthy for league games. Because I do feel like you said, it's a strength, and we can start Holgate. We can start Godfrey. Heck, we can start Holgate and Godfrey and feel like pretty strong.
And I'd be okay with it.
Yeah. See, but the thing is, like, I feel like right now our starting back line, Holgate, Mina, Keane, and Godfrey. That's my starting back line at the moment. And so that's why, like, for me, I feel like consistency Yerry Mina has started he's been really consistent lately. He's not made nearly as many of those silly brain farts where he goes forward too quickly, you know, leaves the man, makes a silly pass. There's none of that right now. I feel a lot more comfortable, and I want to make sure I say this, I am fully comfortable starting either Holgate or Godfrey in any league game ever, period. Yep. And you're right. It's an awesome question, and it's an awesome position to be in. It's like, I mean, it reminds me like when they talk about, okay, American football analogy, are you ready? When you're rebuilding a team, you start from the inside out, you know, start with the O-line. Mm-hmm. O-line, D-line, start from the inside, the big people at the center, at the foundation, and build outward. And I feel like starting with center backs is a great place to go. Make sure you've got depth at the center back position, and then build outward and go. So that's our position of the greatest depth. And that's amazing. That's exactly what you want to do. So, yeah, I feel exactly. Good. Whoa, great. Very cool question.
He could – Yeah, I agree. My final thought, Carlo at this point could literally start any one of those four people at any one of those positions, because they all can play all four back there. And so, and like you said, if for on Sunday we go with like Godfrey, Holgate, Mina, mm-hmm. and Keane in some way, shape, or form, it's fine. That's fine with me.
So, loyal supporter, like that, on Reddit has asked a question that we have sort of answered, but maybe not specifically. We had to give a quick attention to it. There are four questions here by loyal supporter. The first one, let's be fast. Who do you think will start against Sheffield Wednesday in the FA Cup fourth round? And will DCL and Alan be fit in time for that or the Leicester match? I genuinely have no idea about – I don't think Alan's going to be ready for either one. I think very good chance of DCL being fit, though.
Yeah. Carlo didn't seem too concerned about DCL. I think a lot of it was, okay, he has a hamstring injury, but I think the hamstring injuries resulted from all the playing time he's had. And it's more, I think he's basically rewarding him for how many great months he's had consistently. Yeah. And say, all right, you get January off, essentially. And, nice. And like, we're going to say it's a hammy, and I know you want to play, but we need you for this stretch run.
Yeah.
So I think DCL is going to be ready Sunday. I think he starts. Hammy injuries are just tough. Especially tough, really bad ones.
His was pretty severe, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when he literally, you saw him pull up and he basically said, I can't even walk, and told the medical staff, like, I'm going to fall down because it's so painful.
Yeah.
You just knew, it's like, that's a month at least. It's probably more.
Yeah, and that's what I was thinking.
And we all know, with the rare exceptions of like Dean, for instance, when Everton have bad injuries, they have bad injuries. And I would say Allen is probably, looking at the schedule in front of me, we've got a bear of a February. I mean, it's rough. Three away matches, I think, in the month, maybe four. And I'm praying he's ready for, I think, February 8th against United. That's what I would say. I would hope he'd be ready for that one. But that would probably be where a good realistic target.
I think that's realistic as well. I'll agree. I'll just echo all of that. Who do you think is going to start about against Sheffield, Pickford or Olsen?
I'm with you. I think Olsen starts.
Okay. Right back, Coleman, we said.
I think Coleman, but again, this is the line. This is the part of the field. We have no clue. And I'd be fine with anybody.
So let's just give guesses. Coleman, and we both think Keane will start. Who do we think's pairing with Keane? Do we think it's going to be Godfrey, or do we feel like it's going to be Holgate?
Oh, man, cup match. Feel like, you know, Holgate's gotten some playing time lately, but I think he's going to do something along the lines of, he's going to put maybe Holgate and then Godfrey out on the left. Okay. Maybe keep Dean fresh for Leicester.
I think after talking to you and talking it out, I feel like it's going to be Godfrey on the left, and it's going to be Luka Dean on the left wing, just because of his ability to create chances. Oh my gosh, his chance creation is absurd. So I could easily see that happening. Your good point about him resting, I could see that happening too. In the middle, we talked to Kore. Either Andre Gomez or Tom Davies. Let's just pick one.
Gomez.
Andre Gomez. Okay, I agree. And in the middle, we could see James. On the right, Iwo Bino. On the left, either Luka Dean or Anthony Gordon, probably. Or could see Richarlison.
Yeah, I was leaning toward Richarlison because, again, another guy working his way back. Mm-hmm. Has had plenty of time now to rest, maybe get him some minutes at least. Mm-hmm. Although, again, it's a guy we need. He plays well against Leicester. We need him desperately for that match. Yeah. I think it might be a good spot for Gordon here, just with Richarlison coming off the bench to relieve him. You know, probably I'd see Gordon maybe going like 70 minutes, and then if they need Richarlison later, then they can pull him. But again, it's a position of where we have options, which is nice. So
I'm going to be bold, crazy even, and I'm going to say Luka Dean on the left, and I'm going to say Richarlison playing striker, oddly enough. Just because Carlo has listed Richarlison as our possible strikers coming off the bench in the past. So
sure.
Apparently he does still consider him one of those. I don't know how likely it is because he hasn't been doing that at all lately. But, you know, I'm just being bold and weird. So, yeah.
We have no clue. We didn't know. You could have given me 1,000 guesses for the lineup he put out against Wolves. I would never have guessed it.
Never, ever, ever. Never. Not at all. But we're trying to make sure we give, I mean, Cameron's totally right. We're going to be wrong. It'd be crazy if we're right. But we want to make sure we give these questions adequate thought. The next question is JPG, Gabamine, if he's available for selection, will he even have an opportunity? I think yes. We talked about it earlier. So, yeah. Don't you think so? Don't you think he'd get an opportunity?
I agree. If he follows, you know, historically what Carlo normally does with guys who've been out for a long period, may not necessarily start, but I think he gets on the bench if he's healthy. Sure. Mm-hmm. And I think he gets in the game.
I just don't think we have a lot of players of his profile. You know what I mean?
No.
It's not a lot that, with his skill set. You know?
No.
By the way, loyal supporter asks a lot of good questions, so I'm trying to get through these quickly. Third question, with Ellis and Jared going on loan, how do you think they will do? Well, I think Branthwaite's already doing great. I feel like all of us thought he would.
Yeah, and we knew very early on when we got him last year that he's a special talent out at center back. Mm-hmm. And he's clearly got a bright future. And Carlo's just wanted to give him some time because mm-hmm. Jared is basically, he's stuck a little bit right now because, again, we just mentioned how stacked we are at that position.
Yeah. His injury was unfortunately timed. What do you do?
Very unfortunate, and especially given the game that he was playing in.
Yeah.
It was too bad. But as you saw, I mean, if you monitored any social media after Blackburn's first game where he started, everyone said he was by a mile he was their best player. And
which
so,
is cool. That's great to hear.
And they already are trying to get Blackburn to buy him. So
I have fewer worries about Branthwaite than I do about Ellis Sims because Branthwaite has played in the Premier League before and he's mm-hmm. done quite well. He's been with the first team for he's been playing with the first team. He's had way more first team minutes because Ellis Sims has none. Ellis Sims has experienced, you know, U23s. And I think it's tougher. I think it's a tougher transition. I worry more about Ellis Sims. And it has nothing on him. I don't really judge the fact that he's gone out on loan. I actually feel like going out on loan is kind of a vote of confidence for him. I think they're saying, hey, we want you to be in the first team. Go play for Blackpool. Play at a lower league. Show that you can do it consistently. And let's talk. Let's talk when you get back. And show that you're not going to get hurt. Show that you can handle the physicality and still produce. That's the thing. A lot of these guys go out on loan and they look great for a hot second, and then the grind wears them down and they end up injured. It's almost every time. These young kids, it's just the way it is a lot of times. Inconsistency as well. Maybe they're not hurt. Maybe they just find a rough patch of form and the mentality gets affected. It's tough.
And a lot of it also has to do with where they end up, which team is willing to mm-hmm. take them out on loan. Jared is with a team in Blackburn who is, you know, they historically a very a strong team. It used to be, I mean, obviously they won the league 25 years ago and, you know, they've fallen on some hard times, but they're still a championship side that competes week in and week out. And so he's got a lot of motivation there. And they obviously, it's a good foundation. You know, Ellis has also gone to a squad in Blackpool that, you know, they fell on really hard times about a decade ago and haven't quite recovered. I think they're in League One and they're toward the bottom of that table. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of that's going to have to – he's going to have to, first of all, break into that squad and then also – yeah, the culture down there, I don't know too much about Blackpool other than they've had a rough patch for a long time now.
Yeah.
Like if they've got a mentality down there that, you know, kind of shrug your shoulders and move on type deal, like that could affect him as well.
Yeah, so. It could. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be a character test for sure. It's tough. I think we both feel really confident about Branthwaite and with Ellis Sims. It being a loan for him with not having much experience on a first team that's not U23s, got to say, I worry more about him. Nothing on him and his character. It's just tougher. I think it's tougher what he's going through with much his less experience. And the fourth question from loyal supporter, this is kind of a popular question, so let's nail this one quickly. Where do you think we'll need improvement if we were to buy in the transfer window? I think we need way fewer options. Initially, I was like, oh, we need a right back. Well, right now, our back line looks good. I don't think we spend money on a right back right now.
No.
You know what I mean?
Not right now.
I don't think we need to. I feel really comfortable in the options that are provided with us right now. I think both of us would feel more comfortable with a backup striker.
Big time.
But anything else?
We still have to tinker a little bit in the central midfield. Obviously, options are there. We can slide people into positions at like the number 10. Jaimes is, of course, a natural 10. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a question about Davies and Andre Gomez probably moving forward. But I kind of like, as the more I think about it, I like Gylfi in terms of his depth, in terms of providing cover as a deputy behind Jaimes.
Mm-hmm.
And especially, you know, if you have Jaimes on the pitch, as we saw early on, Gylfi really likes playing with him. They seem to have a very good chemistry. Like that amazing goal they scored from the corner. Forget what it was, but you remember it was a very quick play that was run. And it was, you know, they clearly are on the same wavelength. And I wouldn't really want to break them up. But there's still some work that needs to be done with some of the guys in that midfield. And I'm not certain in terms of buying, but maybe just selling at least one of them. Just because I think there's some wage bills that need to be taken care of. But overall, I mean, I think you're right. I think Olsen has kind of calmed me down in terms of the keeper position.
Agreed.
And because we were talking about that the last time, and I was thinking we need to buy a keeper. And but now I'm not really saying that anymore. But yes, the striker position needs to be shored up. We need to have Calvert-Lewin cannot continuously go play 90 minutes every single match.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm definitely singing a different tune about our depth at the moment, just because, I mean, honestly, prices are high right now. January is an awful time to buy.
Yeah.
I would prefer a loan, but the thing is, everybody else ups their prices. They don't want you to. And a lot of the teams that have all the depth also have the ability to be like, oh, you know what? You want that player? Oh, we'll buy them for more than you normally would, or we'll just put them on the bench and they'll never play for us. Sergio Romero.
Yeah.
Example, you know,
there you go.
So yeah, anyway, next question. There are two left, from Giacomo 87. Considering we're in our first full season under Carlo, is it more important to get the best results possible regardless of how we do it, or to see a clear pattern of play developing?
Ooh, it's very in-depth questions. I think we touched on this. It was a similar type question. Would you rather, it was more of kind of like along the lines of, what would you rather see? Like, do you want us to win the league or do you want us to just win a trophy?
Yeah.
And I was happy with the trophy. You said the league. I'm kind of at the point now where I'm changing my tune. To answer his question, I think maybe by any means possible, go out and win the league. And, you know, at least get top four. I don't really – at this point, it looks like, because the way Carlo's managing this squad, especially based off the Wolves match, he is going by any means possible. He's going to try to win this. So.
Well, see, that's the funny thing. I actually feel like what it is, he's developing a pattern of play by being really flexible. You know what I mean? And so it's just like, oh, well, you know what? We don't have the right striker combination. So guess what? We're going to do a false nine. What do you think about that? How are you going to defend that? You didn't see that coming. Cool. You know? And I feel like that is the weird pattern of play. You know? Yeah. Think about all the formations we've run this season. We've done a bunch of weird stuff. We have earlier I told you, I was thinking we need a right back. And then all of a sudden Holgate goes in. we changed the role, and Godfrey plays left back, who did not think that would
work. What's going on?
I was like, this is ridiculous. He's not left-footed. But who knew we were going to create something, do something different with the players in front of him, and change the roles. So, yeah, Godfrey still gets forward, but is he crossing left-footed? No, but he doesn't need to. Not with what he's trying to do, not with what he's asked to do. He's, the roles are being redefined and fitted to our, to our team. So the pattern of play to me is flexible football and winning. It's and getting results, being able to defend well and hold on to a one goal lead. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's a wonderful thing.
It is. I mean, he's this lovable mad scientist in his lab, just coming up with these new schemes, and he's basically saying, I manage, you don't, and yeah. I've been doing this for 20-30 years, you haven't, so why don't you trust me on this one? And yeah, I didn't really follow football too much about 20-25 years ago, but when I did, you know, a lot of the team that was always on was AC Milan. Mm-hmm. Milan, and especially when Carlo was managing them. But that's just, it's kind of like, you know, he had a lot of great players at his disposal, but he also, I mean, they were winning the league because they were just much more innovative than everybody else. I mean, he was getting the most out of every single player that he had at his disposal. So, and they, I mean, that was Milan's heyday. Like, they still, I mean, I don't know, they might have a statue of him out front at the San Siro, but they should, because, I mean, Milan fans still talk glowingly about him even two decades later because of just how incredible a manager he was for them. And I think that's everywhere he goes. Yeah. Chelsea fans, the Napoli fans, same thing.
That's true, actually. I definitely talked to Napoli fans as well. Yeah, yeah, that's very true. I personally feel like we've had style before. Style that has not resulted in results. So personally, I am going to say there's two ways to take this question. If you look at our patterns of play, I do think defensively, we're stout defensively. And we defend hard every single game. We're tough to score on now. Tougher to score on now than we used to be, right? So there's that way of looking at it, right? I think the results are more important, personally. I think what Carlo is doing is he's got us playing a lot of different kinds of football. And it's not, maybe it's not really like you put your finger on it and say, that's what they're doing. They're doing this. It is a very, you know, solving problems based on what you have type of a scenario. That's what you do. I feel like that's the type of coach he is. He doesn't go into a place and say, this is my style. What he does is he looks at what's there already and tweaks it and tries to make it better and tries to make the players the best they possibly can be. That's what Carlo does, right?
Yeah.
He's not like a Klopp where he comes in and goes, this is my style. You will all bow before me. You know, it's nothing like that. It's not what Carlo does. You know, Carlo's not an all bow before me kind of guy. He's a, hey, I see what you were doing before. I think we can do it like this too. We can do it better. Let's go. You know? And so, yeah. So I'm more focused on the results, because I think results are actually tougher to come by than developing a style, personally.
Yeah. And I think it's no coincidence that literally every player who has played for Carlo has nothing but good things to say about him.
Yeah.
And it's why we get guys like Allen and Hymas.
Absolutely.
To come play for us, because it's like, oh, Carlo's here. Because he hones their game to what they're able to do.
Definitely.
And, you know, you have like Carlo, and then the complete anti-Carlo, which we went through with Ronald Koeman. And he was the guy who was an authoritarian who said, I know all there is to know about this game, and you're going to conform to how I'm running things.
Right.
And that's why we get Dominic Calvert-Lewin at right wing back. And somehow we won that game. That was the Stoke match, the Rooney match, when his first game. But either way, but that's when you have guys out of position, but not for a good thing. It's because he has no, he doesn't know where to, he thinks they can play at that spot, even though they don't want to, and they can't. And, but he does it anyway. And where it's like square peg round hole, but here it's not so much that, it's Carlos saying, well, I think you can play here because I see like the way that you do play. And, you know, with Iwobi is a great example. Iwobi, he knows, is much better centralized. And so he says, well, let's fine tune this system so that you can run inwards, you know, from the cut in from the right wing. So that, and then lo and behold, hey, he actually has shooting boots.
Yeah. And it's just, I feel like it's a preparation thing too. It's, he's saying, okay, well, you may be a little closer to a square peg in this round hole. So we're going to, let's adapt a system around that to work it out, you know? So, yeah.
Yep.
Anyway, last question. This person is on Reddit. I am Koopa. Where do you see Everton 5 years from now?
I mean, Carlo has indicated he wants to be here for a long time. If Carlo is still here in 5 years, I will be just ecstatic that he is. I would say in five years, at the rate he has turned this team around in just 13 months, I think Everton will consistently be challenging top four in the next, within the next 5 years. I think that they will be chasing trophies in all the cup competitions. I see them. I don't know if it's a bold statement, but I think in the next 5 years, Everton's going to have finally added to their trophy case in some way, shape, or form, whether it's FA Cup or whether it's Europa League. I don't know about winning Champions League in 5 years, although that's definitely a goal to have. That'd be great. But I could see, I think FA Cup is something that they should be striving for now. And in the next 5 years, I think they will be challenging for to win the league. And I could see a league title.
Yeah. I think challenging top four is a good way of putting it, because right now the amount of money that's going into these clubs, they're being run. A lot of them are being run really well, and they're accruing a lot of talent, and they're getting really consistent managers that want to stay there. It's not just, they don't immediately want to bolt after, you know, they want to be there and stay there. So challenging top four, I think, is the respectful thing to say to a strong league. I like the way you word that. I think that's cool. Trophies are so hard to peg. I could see us winning trophies in the next 5 years. I think, but the only thing I feel really good about, this is crazy. I feel like this is crazy. I could see us winning the league once in the next 5 years, just because the trajectory we're on, I don't think once we get a deeper squad, I don't think it's ridiculous to think that, because we're this close now and we're not deep. We're not deep at all. We have a good manager. I think what you were talking about, I think it will help to start continuing to work on that academy and make sure that everyone's on the same mindset in terms of how they're coaching and how they're developing the players. I feel, you know, cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs here, but yeah, man, I got to tell you, I could see once winning the league. I don't think it's a ridiculous thing to say with that development trajectory. So.
No, and we're a league where it can't happen. You look at Leicester, you know, 5 years ago, it can't happen. And this is, you know, right now, Jerry, I know that you've got United's kind of is at top of the league right now, but at the same time, the top of the table is so bunched up.
Yeah,
if there's ever a time for an upset to happen, it's this year.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, if people ask, do you think Everton can win the league? Sure, I could. We're 8 points off top right now, but we have 2 games in hand because we got to make those up. So, I mean, we go out and we've already beaten Leicester. If we can get over the humps against the Manchester clubs and finally break the hoodoo against the neighbors, you know, that's, I mean, that again, it's the year to do it. So.
Yeah. And consistently getting results against teams we should beat too. That's the other thing. I think that's
exactly
one of the things that, you know, continuing to get those 3 points where people look below us in the table and they say, oh yeah, you guys should win this weekend. And then you do something stupid. You know what I mean? It's consistency, yeah, continuing to carve out that consistency.
Yeah, it's, you know, I'm not sure which match I was angrier after, West Ham or Newcastle, but I think it might have been West Ham just because it was a home match. But Newcastle was very close.
That's a great question, by the way.
That's the new. But the thing is, though, we have those pickups every now and then, but not nearly as often as we used to. Mm-hmm. And that's something that will hopefully kind of pave over in time and start being more consistent. Because we're also seeing these clubs above us right now dropping points to clubs that they don't have any business doing,
losing to.
So it is, I mean, it happens. I mean, look, the neighbors are dropping points left and right, which I'm totally fine with. The Manchester clubs are still like they're getting stronger, but they're still vulnerable. So it's kind of an open season this year. And I think, you know, if we can have some modicum of consistency where we don't have a stretch like we did in October, November, I think that we can challenge now, and I think we'll be challenging again next year and in the next couple of years.
Oh yeah. I think you look at the teams in the league right now and no one's blowing everybody away. And I think that right there, you know, you don't look at, there's no games where I look right now and I'm like, oh God, that's going to suck. I don't think that anymore. You know what I mean? Cause there's no one like sticking their head above saying, we're better than everybody, you know? So anyway,
agreed.
I usually get excited about those kind of hard games though. I'm weird. But anyway.
Oh, I mean, that's the thing now is that the next thing is the mentality has to change for
absolutely
like February, for not just players, fans. You got to look at the stretch run we've got in February where we've got United away, we got Liverpool away, back to back with an FA Cup possibly in the middle, and you got to look at that and say, well, we got to go out and do it then.
I go into every one thinking, this could feasibly happen. You know what I mean? That we could grind out a win, you know? So anyway, good stuff.
Good stuff, man.
Very cool. I'm gonna win the lot. Let's do this. Five years from now.
Or, you know, in May.
Hey, I said within the next 5 years, so technically that counts.
You'd be right.
what a weirdo if I took credit for that one.
I hope you do. I will.
Oh man. All right. So that's the end of the show, man. We are done. Cameron, just want to make sure that anybody who's watching follows Cameron, the Carolina Toffees Twitter account. You can communicate with them there. If you're in the Carolinas area and you want to get linked up there, you can find them there or on Facebook. Any other Cameron Carolina Toffees based stuff we need to plug?
For I guess housekeeping purposes, it's at Carolina Toffees in both Instagram and Twitter.
Instagram as well. Yeah.
Yes, correct. I control both, and generally the most of that is me yelling at the club on Twitter during matches and also setting the match time meetups. The COVID situation is kind of unchanged at the moment. We are still having meetups at QCBC, which is the bar in Charlotte right now. It is open. For instance, we are trying to do we will be open for the match on Sunday. We are planning to try and have people come down from Winston and from Greenville and anywhere else, maybe Columbia. I haven't put it up there yet on Facebook, but we did a poll. We thought, all right, what's a good weekend time? The Derby seems to have been the outright winner on February 20th. It just came out with the match times for that. We actually got a good time for once in the Derby. I don't know when the last time we played them at 12:30 p.m. on a Saturday was, but that's what's happening next month, the 20th, I believe, it's Saturday. So we are going to put that in the works. If people are comfortable with coming to Charlotte to QCBC and watching that with us, we are going to put that together. So that is the next thing.
I'm going to look into it. I'm going to see if the kids have any games. So, yeah, awesome. I'll look into that. Because if the kids have a game, it'll be tough. But if not, they do that. That sounds fun.
Awesome.
All right. Very
love
cool.
Love to finally meet you, not in Zoom form.
Yeah, I know. Virtual. I know. Meeting everybody on Zoom these days. Very cool. Well, Cameron, I just want to make sure I said thank you. Thank you for your time. As always, it's a pleasure to hang out and talk Everton with you. I wanted to make sure and let's see here. I got to do my housekeeping duties now. Make sure if you've enjoyed checking this out, please subscribe to the Toffee Blues YouTube channel and Toffee Blues podcast and all that stuff. We'd really appreciate it. Also check out the Toffee Blues on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And there's a website, Toffee Blues, the website. And there's, you know, a lot of written content by a lot of the contributors that you find here on this channel. A lot of them are my friends. But they're super smart blues, and yeah, a lot of good insight on there. Lastly, it's not Christmas. I don't care. I need to plug my book, Randolph the Christmas Moose. This idea conceived during a Toffee Blues podcast. So yeah, find it on Instagram. Not Instagram. I'm saying Instagram. I'm a genius. Find it on Amazon. People have been saying nice stuff. It's been pretty cool. So if you want to check it out, if you got a young one who's interested in stories about moose that want to be reindeer, that you know training and coming into your own as a person and not letting other people take who you want to be away from you. Yeah, maybe it's up your alley. I don't know. So anyway, that's it. I'm done.
Go buy it. I said so.
Cameron, thank you. All right.
Anyway. Thank you guys. Thank you, Jerry. And thank you to the Toffee Blues as well. You guys do great work, and I always appreciate the invites and being able to come on here.
Hey man. It's very cool. I'm always get excited when you're on, man. So yeah, because then I'm just like, oh, I may actually meet him soon. This is cool. So but thanks again, man. Really appreciate your time and insight. It's always great to talk to you.
Yeah, you too, buddy.
All right. So for everybody else out there, FA Cup beckons. Be great to get a win, be great to advance, to play potentially Spurs or Wickham. Who knows who it would be. So got to get this one done first, though. And championship opposition, never easy. Much love, everybody. Really curious what Carlo does. We'll see.
Come on, you Blues.
Yes, definitely. All right. Much love. And, let's do this. Got to get a win. Got to advance. All right. Bye.